just found out I'm listening to Fresh Air Community Radio. That's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And online at kfai.org. And so are you.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org. Non-commercial and community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Chi miigwech. Bonjour, relatives across our great Turtle Island and beyond. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, your host for the next hour on Medicine Bundle, the show celebrating Indigenous people and our allies as we creatively embrace our gifts of healing and connection. What's in your medicine bundle? Time just at me and say it with your chest. Last time I saw you, you couldn't see less. You playing checkers, but I'm playing chess. Boy, you ain't got my ex, got a lot to address. How am I pretending Resi when I'm booked on the red? How am I pretending and blood quantum's in the red? Got a tribal ID if you wanna act like the feds. Supposed to be a gorilla, so let me show you what that is. Turtle Island, this is your host, Deanna Standing Cloud, for Medicine Bundle, and it is Friday, and it is the first week of December 2025, so that year went by pretty fast. We have a special guest in the studio with us today, and we are both a little caffeinated, so, but I'm going to just allow him to introduce himself, and we'll get right into our conversation.
Ho Mitakipi, Justice Birkenrup and Makiapido, Sichanhu Yanke Hechiomawapi, Gawana Bideo Do Tunwe, Deadwati, and Kuan Pitude, Watecha Records, Iwoha Dakikte. Hello my relatives, my name is Justice Birkenrup. I'm an enrolled member of the Rosebud Lakota Nation. And happy to be here with Deanna today. Talk about some projects.
Ho wa. That's amazing. So you're burnt thigh.
Got a problem?
No. I actually, somebody sent a map, I think an allotment map, like of family names in Rosebud, and my last name was on there. And I'm like, there's a Standing Cloud out there. So I don't know if we have family out there, but no, I don't have a problem.
I was like, I remember seeing your name and I thought, like, I think back when I first moved here sometime in the last, like, 5 to 6 years before I knew you. And I was like, I feel like this person's probably Ogallala or Rosebud, maybe. But I mm-hmm. don't know. There's a lot of different names with cloud out there, too. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why.
But. Well, there is. So my grandpa is, his name is Basil Standing Cloud. And he, I think he might have, I'm not exactly sure where he was from, whether it might have been Nakota. Mm-hmm. But he was married to my grandma, who was from Red Lake, and he was there when they made the reservation borders, and then they let him stay there. So he was not Anishinaabe, but he was a good hunter. Mm-hmm. So he hunted those lands. So Justice, you are a youth worker, and you work in education, and you're also an archivist. So how did you come to be here in Minnesota Makoche?
I grew up in Nebraska, central Nebraska, kind of near this town called Grand Island. But I grew up in a really small town, and I when I was young, like in my teens, even I got into punk music and like more abrasive, fast music, started playing in those kinds of bands. And then eventually I started touring early on in those bands. And by my like late teens, early 20s, had seen most of the country touring, and I had ended up in Minneapolis a handful of times. And I moved around in my early 20s, and then I knew people from playing in those bands, and then I knew there were a bunch of Indians here. And I was like, well, I was living in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was like, if I'm going to end up back in the Midwest, I'm going to go to this place because I know there's a bunch of Indians and I know people through music. And so, in 2015, I moved here, and I was 22 years old. And so I've been here, it'll be 11 years in July.
Wow.
So, yeah, just kind of through music, I guess, ended up here, music and culture. Which is what we're here to talk about today.
So it's just such a special, powerful place. So we're very lucky to have you here.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to be here. And I think, too, as you're talking about that, I'm just like, every time I've tried leaving, something keeps me here. And I'm just like, I think it's, well, largely I know it's the community. But then just knowing that we get to do some of the work that we do, and this is a space to do it, and it's our space, it's our land. And so that's the thing where I'm just like, every time I try and think, oh, I'm going to move back to, you know, Omaha, or I'm going to move to somewhere else, like, something happens, and I'm like, I'll stay here a few more years, and I've been saying that for, like, 5-6 years now.
Where are you trying to go? Where are you trying to go, Justin?
I won't reveal that right now, it's a really special place, and, you know, it's like what brought me here keeps me here sort of thing, and it's my ancestors' land, too, and so that feels very significant, too, just on its own. Like, spiritually, I'm staying here, and then physically, I'm staying here too, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
As a young person, how did music kind of shape and influence you?
Yeah, my dad was a rocker, you know, and he's not with us anymore. He journeyed on in 2013, but growing up, there was always music playing. And my dad wasn't a musician, but he was born in 63, and so he very much grew up as like a teen in the 70s. So his favorite bands were like Kiss and like, you know, Thin Lizzy, like Boston, stuff like that. And so distinctly, I remember growing up, like the Broken Ropes are a big family, but we'd all be crammed into this little like Pontiac Grand Prix. And my dad would always have these cassettes in, and they were just like mixes he had dubbed off the radio or whatever. And so I just grew up hearing that, like a lot of classic rock. And then he kept up with things too, so I'd hear a lot of like Pearl Jam and Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins. So I just was constantly surrounded by like rock music and things that he liked. And my mom was very much into country, which I didn't like then. I love it now. But so there's just always music playing in the house. And despite my parents not being musicians, like they were very enthusiastic about me like picking up a guitar or getting fixated on these artists. And you know, going to record stores when I was a teen, like my dad would drive me to those places. And, you know, it was one of those things where they were very supportive and encouraging early on. And I think that kind of fostered this, you know, passion for it that I still have today and have kind of built my life around in a lot of ways. I think so much about that, the way that we use music even to bond with different experiences in our life, and the way that you can think about, like, you know, maybe something that was happening could be great, could be really brutal or devastating, but often you can think about things that were going on at that time, and music impacts a lot of that, whether it's something that was playing on the radio then or just what you were listening to a lot when that was happening. And you know, even with the heavy stuff, I think that's really good for healing and processing and reflecting. And I know not everyone loves music, but I've never met a Native person who doesn't have some sort of like, either they're really into it, or they do something around it, or they're just like, yeah, I enjoy it. But I have met people who are like, I don't listen to music, but I've never met a Native person who said that to
me. So. You're like, what? I couldn't even imagine life, like, because it just, yeah, how?
Yeah,
why?
Me neither. I don't know. But, yeah, what were you listening to
growing
up? Or, like, what were your parents playing around?
Well, they were playing, you know, like, classic rock and stuff, and I didn't catch on to that. I was very influenced because I lived right here. Not in East Phillips neighborhood, so I was very influenced by the hip-hop culture.
Yeah.
So all the hip-hop stuff. I mean, I didn't, you know, like R&B too was a lot, was huge. So one of my first conferences. Oh, big auntie.
Yeah, yeah.
concert. concerts was I saw Biggie Smalls in person. Geez. It was my dad. My dad was with me, so he was all into it. I was like 15, and it was like 95. But they were all like, everyone was like smoking weed, and I'm like, are we gonna get in trouble for this? I wasn't doing it, but I was like, isn't this like illegal? You know, but it was amazing. Like Craig Mack and I think Jodeci and Mary J. Blige and I forgot who else was there. The Loonies.
I was going to say, peak era, in my opinion, is like early to mid-90s for so much of that stuff. Or yes. Like what I keep going back to. And I'm like, this still sounds so good.
It does. And I feel like my Apple Music library is stuck in the 90s. So I have to get some information from my kids. Like, what are you guys listening to? Because I don't know. Because I don't know how to. In this like age, it's like hard to like keep up because like you don't have the radio or like MTV to know what's going on, so I don't know what the equivalent of that is.
Like the students that I work with, sometimes I'll just, you know, they'll ask me about music, like, what do you like, Justice? And like, I mean, my favorite band of all time is Nirvana, and I was born in 93, so like I was only on the earth for 1 year with Nirvana before they ended. And so I don't know. I'm in that mode where, like, I think about music this certain way, and then my students will talk with me about it. I'm like, well, how do you guys find out about music? And, you know, a lot of them just say TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting, too, because it's just, you know, there's, like, Spotify algorithms and TikTok. And then, you know, if you leave a YouTube channel kind of running in the background, something will usually pop up. And so I don't know. Every generation has their own distinct ways of finding things. But it's funny now because so much of my work just focuses on stuff that happened 30, 40 years before I was born in some cases. So I don't know. I'm not the one to talk about, I guess, discovering music organically.
He's like, don't ask me.
I don't know. Yeah.
I have no idea.
But
that's funny. And it's so my, let's see, right, I think it was like 2001, I actually discovered Immortal Technique.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I just started listening. I started learning about like the political, like he must have, you know, did a lot of reading because a lot of that knowledge comes out. So it got me excited about like, what else have I not learned? And I feel like music is a way to express the things that, you know, like the educational system has not told us, yeah, or like the truth of things. So what has your experience been with that experience, you know, like finding the truth or like learning something new on your journey with music?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting just with that sort of almost like an awakening or something where I grew up with this like classic rock kind of country, like always playing in the house. And then as a teenager, I didn't push back on that, but rather I just kept digging, and I got really into punk music, which you know, this is like when the internet was starting to become really more useful. And like, I'm a young kid at this point. This is in like late 90s, early 2000s, starting to like dig in. And punk music in itself, a lot of it had so much like radical politics or anti-authoritarian or like questioning things. And some of it was like in an angsty, like I hate my parents kind of way, which I didn't really resonate with that as much, but, you know, I was also skateboarding and, like, doing all this other stuff. And so I think, you know, as I got more into that music history of itself and that genre and listening to that type of music a lot, and it kind of led me to thinking about more of identity and, like, radicalizing myself and kind of, like, moving beyond maybe, you know, I feel like the majority of songs you hear on the radio are often love songs or heartbreak songs. And I obviously love that stuff, but then also thinking about more things more critically. And this is like, you know, when like George Bush was president too, and 9/11 had happened. So there's a lot of like media constantly all the time around, you know, what was going on, current events and things like that. And so I grew up in that era and generation of like, there's music that's talking about this all the time. There's like punk music that's addressing these things and challenging me to think in a place like rural Nebraska where I otherwise wouldn't have that influence. And so I think for me, it was just music became this thing where I was like enjoying it, loving like hanging out, listening to it, but also learning from it as well. And then that opened me up to a lot of different genres and things as time went on in itself. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just one of those things where If you spend time with it and you start to dig around, you figure out what you like, you know, there's a lot more that can be pulled and kind of awakened from it mm-hmm. within yourself too. So,
yeah. And it's like a mix of poetry plus, you know, you have, different parts of your brain that are lit up. So it almost like opens you up to like more information, and you're kind of getting like almost spiritual downloads sometimes if you really are in the zone and you're feeling the sounds and like what did they mean by that? What did they mean
exactly.
by that? And
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like you sink deeper into it, and it's such a powerful I think it's like a powerful gift to us, especially as Native people.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching, I don't know if it was like a decade ago, but when it first came out, the Indians That Rock the World.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
documentary. I felt so empowered to be Native.
Yeah.
I tried to recommend it often. And I'm like, I had no idea that this person was Native. Because you always hear like Redbone or, you know, Johnny Cash is like, I don't know. He's part Native.
He's like platforming Natives. And yeah, I think, you know, that's so much of it where when I started doing some of the work that I do now, you know, I was realizing like, oh, some of these songs, and I wrote this in like the preface of the book that I've coming out, where I was like, some of these songs were, you know, heartbreak songs, love songs, but then a lot of them were coming out in late 60s, early 70s. These are, yeah, boarding school, survivors making music, and it's going on with concurrent with the civil rights movement and these red power movements and different things. And so making music that is not only, you know, and then there's the music that's written for like, you know, your cousin like crossing the res border with like a 12 pack, like he's trying to party this week, you know. So there was like love songs, like political songs, like party songs, like Natives were doing it all. And, you know, with the backdrop of like rock and country music and just different things going on. And, you know, I think there's so much history with that. And that Rumble documentary was really cool too. And just, I remember when that came out too, and just being like, wow, there's like an actual visual to this, because it's just mm-hmm. stuff I've kind of heard about or read about very briefly. And then, yeah, finding out more and more who out there is Native or comes from these communities or whatever it might be, and being like, oh, hell yeah, we're represented there, you know?
Yeah, so. Claiming Jimi Hendrix, and like, oh, he's Native.
Oh, yeah.
My cousin. I'm like, that's why he's so good, because
exactly.
he's Native.
Yeah, yeah.
We're claiming it. So do you, how did you, so you're a DJ. I'm just going to shift gears.
Oh,
my
yeah,
mind
yeah.
is all over the place. I have perimenopause going on. So, like, so I'm kind of like a squirrel. No, not too bad. But so you're a DJ now. How did that start? I know your influence with music. When did you start kind of doing that? Because it's...
Yeah, I think... I don't know. It's strange because, yeah, I used to play in these bands, and I would play guitar, bass. I played drums really bad once in a band. But I probably played in, like, 10 to 15 different bands over the last, like, you know, since I was, I don't know, 12 years old to, like, 25, 26 years old. And then I went back to school... for language, and then I, you know, pandemic hit. And so it was like, I think when I started phasing out of playing music, I'd been a record collector since I was young, or around the same time, like 12, 13, started getting into records. And, you know, I'd get asked to like come spin records at, you know, like some sort of event or a bar or a party or something. And I'd just be like, yeah, cool. And so I'd bring, you know, get paid, get a free meal, whatever it might be. And, I just bring these like, you know, punk records or country records, whatever I was asked to, or the vibe or whatever it was. And when I started like archiving and digitizing all these like Native rock and folk and country records, like folks in community who knew me from language work and things that I did were like, oh, I heard you DJ. Do you want to bring that music? And I was like, I've never been asked to bring Native records before. And then I was like, oh, I could do this. And, you know, we have such a rich Native community here in the Twin Cities where, you know, once people found out I kind of did that, they, A, got curious about it, and then B, were like, it's on that list of Native performers in town mm-hmm. where, Justice Broken Up can bring, like, old Indian records to play at this thing. And so it kind of fell, like, in place like that. I wasn't actively trying to, and I had a friend... Destiny, who does the farmer's market, mm-hmm. Four Sisters Farmer's Market. I think she was the first one that was like, I heard you DJ Native Records, which I didn't at that time. I just DJed records. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, yeah, I can bring a stack of those. And that was kind of it. And so then I kind of shifted to just doing mostly that. And I had had a radio show at that point where I played that stuff on air, but I wasn't, like, bringing it out and bringing turntables and things. Like, you know, I think the first time I met you was at an event we were both mm-hmm. working. And, yeah, it kind of just shifted to, I would say, going back to school, playing in bands less, pandemic hits. And now people are asking me, like, do you play music, playing any bands these days? And I'm like, no, I just play other people's music.
These days,
yeah, yeah. So, and I'm fine with that. I'm like, it's easier to just do this. And I know more about it. I'm better at it than I ever was at playing guitar or something. So, but yeah, it just kind of fell into place that way. And I think largely because we're in a place with a bunch of other natives. And it's a community that really supports itself and supports each other. So I'm very grateful. Yeah. I don't know if it would have happened in another city. Maybe, like, I don't know, Albuquerque or mm-hmm. somewhere, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, where there's other natives. But really, it feels like here, you know, it was meant to be. So
are you ever scared to, like, bring your, because the records, I would imagine, are worth a lot. Because I would probably be a little, or do you have, like, a select, like, a couple duplicates, or how does that work?
Yeah, there are records that, let's just say I have hefty credit card debt. Because what happens, some of these records, you know, it's like I bring out things like Redbone and like Keith Sokola, Link Ray, stuff like that. And then at the same time, part of my work and what I consider my job with this is to find records that didn't really leave their reservation or didn't leave their communities and try and like digitize them, platform them so their natives can hear it. So often those records are really rare or not documented online. And sometimes there's records that was able to purchase once in 2017 and I have not seen it ever again since. Or I found it at a record store, you know, 5-6 years ago and I've never seen it online. And so those ones where it's like, and then there are records that, interestingly enough, white record collectors have, you know, kind of often like the, you know, way that native art can be fetishized or mm-hmm. like the novelty of it to someone who's non-native, and they have driven up the price of those records. So like I've spent $500 on a single like record from the Hopi Res from these like boarding school students who had a garage rock band in the mid-60s. And it's like that record was so expensive and I hated having to spend that much money on it as a native person, but there was nowhere else to hear it. No one who had it had digitized it or anything. And so like, you know, I'm like, well, I want to find this and make sure that other native people can hear it. And other like Hopi people have actually reached out to me and been like, oh, my dad like knew this guy in the band, or like, you know, this is my cousin, or like the YouTube comments on some of the albums are really special to see for that reason. But that's a long answer to, yeah, some of the records, if something happened to them, I wouldn't be able to replace them. Mm-hmm. And that's like the part where I'm like, well, at least I can digitize it, put it out there. But I'll say like in town, I do bring out some of those like more pricey, expensive ones. When I get asked to DJ like out of town, I try and have doubles of things, or I just don't bring those. The other thing, I kind of cheat sometimes and use an old iPod. Mm-hmm. And I put the digital files of those on like an iPod from like 2005 or 6 that I have, and I'll use vinyl and that iPod. And technically the records that are on the iPod are my physical copies, but it's just because I don't want to fly to New York with a $600 record and,
right,
you know, run the risk of anything happening. And so, yeah, it is stressful, but I also, you know, I think part of it too, when I'm DJing out and about in town, and the purpose of bringing like the physical vinyl is so I want us to see ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to hear something and be like, oh, I think these guys are native or they're singing about native stuff. But then when you pick up the record and it has this uncle on it or this auntie, and, you know, it's from a very distinct specific time, and that person looks at you, or maybe they're related to you or something, like having that physical component is really special. And my favorite part of it has been, yeah, when elders come up and they're like, I haven't seen a record in like 30, 40 years. And I'm like, well, I got a whole stack of them if you want to look through. And then they start seeing things they remember. And then younger kids come up, like at that event we were at recently, and they're like, I don't even know what this is. It's like little plastic pancake. Like, what is music comes out of this? And So it's just really cool to see different generations interact with it. And it's like, yeah, some of them I'm like, wow, this is like, you know, it is art. It's like, I don't want to, you know, do I want to bring this really expensive thing out to this place and there's going to be people running around and there's food or something. But then I'm like, well, I want people to see this stuff too. It's not there for me to just like hoard in my apartment and, you know, just like gawk at. It's like, we need to see ourselves. And, you know, I think that feeling is really special of just holding something up and you see another native on it, whether it's magazine, TV show, music, whatever it might be. And so, yeah, it's like those things are rare, hard, they would be hard to find again, but it's also important too that other people get to see them and feel them as well.
Yeah. So. Oh my good. Yeah, I was just thinking museum when you were talking about that, because it's, you know, when Native people, you know, you go into the collections or whatever, exactly, where that nobody can see, but Native, you have to like bring your Native tribal ID or something. Yeah. But you can't really touch anything, and you're like, this is kind of weird, because it's like you're visiting relatives and you can't touch them, mm-hmm, and it's just strange. So that's yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because it's not, it's a living thing and it's been preserved for us to listen to it. And if it's working at this time, that's really special. So I appreciate you having the community in mind, because with the generational thing and, you know, there's probably not a lot of things that our elders are, you know, get excited about, you know, in this, the climate that we're in. And if you bring those records to them, it's like they remember a time where, you know, they were younger, or, you know, so I really think that's super special to have that for the elders, because they, you know, a lot of us, you know, don't often visit with them, or, mm-hmm, you know, they're, you know, isolated, and there's a lot of elders at that event that we're at. So I thought that was kind of cool that people were super interested and come to your station and like, ooh, look at this. So, and it's hard, yeah, to see that rarity and that light kind of spark in their eyes. It's really amazing.
It's fun for me too, just in the sense of like, I get to hear their stories then through that lens. They tell me about things that were happening in their life when that record came out, or like Floyd Westerman, for instance. He's from Sistan, and so many Dakota and Ojibwe folks, Lakota folks here in town have stories about him, or their parents or friends. Like, this happens regularly, I would say, with him. And then even at an event, his niece was there, and she told this other Native poet guy to come over. Oh, I just covered my mouth on this thing. Sorry. The mic cut out. This other Native poet came over to me, and he was like, hey, can we make a request for Floyd Westerman? I'm sitting next to his niece. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I was glad I had the record on me, because sometimes I don't bring everything every time, but I had it. And I was just like, this is a reminder of why I do this, or why it's special, is just that connection. And in this case, like a direct relative, too. But yeah, it just circles back to, you know, seeing ourselves represented and then having that connection through family or memories or experiences, whatever it might be. But yeah, it's really sweet just to experience that and get to be a part of that story too.
It'd be cool to document like their reaction to,
oh yeah,
the albums, because it's stuff you wouldn't know, because, you know, it'd be kind of cool to do, like, I'm always thinking of a big, huge project to start. Like, let's do a documentary.
Yeah, that's the Native way. You're like, let's get a grant. Let's make this, let's like, get a grant. Movie. Let's do that. And we should. That's the thing, you know. But, yeah, I, that's the same thing. I'm always like, man, I got so many projects I could do. And oh then I'm gosh. Like, with what time?
I know. I'm all unreasonable about everything I want to do. Like, yeah, let's write a book and let's do this. And, I mean, I suppose if you did one little thing every day. But yeah, that would be really cool. And if the more interest that was generated, you know, there could be a team and there could be more people kind of working with you to like capture those moments, or like, you know, put an album in front of an elder and like, ooh, what does this mean to you? And then have those stories come up, because it's different than a question. Like, instead of, because I've interviewed a couple elders recently, and when I ask a question, they actually don't even answer my original question anyway. So it'd be cool to like have that album, and like as a almost like a channel, like here's a mirror or something, or just some kind of conduit to their memory instead of you asking a question. I interviewed Gary Farmer a couple weeks ago, and I'd ask a question, and he would not answer my question. It was really good. It was good stuff, but it was not, he didn't answer my question. So I find elders either don't answer your question or they'll ask you a question.
Yeah.
That's how it
Which
goes.
You learn just as much, if not always more.
And yeah.
We'll get to that point too at some
point. For sure.
I know there's going to be someone, I used to be a preschool teacher, and so I'm like, I'm going to meet one of those kids in like 20 years, and they'll probably ask me something. I'll just ramble away about something, but
it's happening now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm on the cusp. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to go into like more of the archival process and like kind of what you're seeing along your journey and talk about your book. This is Deanna Standing Cloud on Medicine Bundle with our guest, Justice Broken Rope.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cloudland Theater, presenting Abandoned Cities, Saturday, December 6th. Abandoned Cities is a new sound exploration project from Charlie Parr and Christian McShane, featuring McShane on cello, creating droning soundscapes punctuated by Parr's alternatively tuned guitar. It's a sonic journey that invites listeners to feel their way deeper into the present moment. Opening the show is Paul Metzger and Real Tree featuring Eric Fretzky. More information about Abandoned Cities is available at cloudlandtheater.com.
Bonjour, we're back. You're listening to Medicine Bundle, and we are here chatting with Justice Broken Rope. The history of Native music in Minneapolis is kind of a specific story that you're talking about. So, and I can recall a lot of it back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I think here too, and even going back to like bringing the records to DJ events and folks telling me like about their memories or experiences with that music, but also that's been really cool for me to hear stories and someone's like, oh yeah, my uncle used to play in this band, or like my auntie sang in this country band or something. And you know, I'm always like, did they make a record or a tape or anything? Do you remember? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Or sometimes they do know. And it's just part of the fun of like digging. And there's an elder I reached out to in Sisseton that I'm hopefully going to meet up with sometime this year, because their husband, who journeyed on, I think in 20 or 21, he put out some country records in the late 70s. And so there's nowhere that they're digitized or anything. I had found out about them through a catalog from like a printed catalog from Canyon Records in the late 80s. And we've just been talking on Facebook, and she's been helpful. She's like, I want you to just get his music out there if you can. And so it's like that. And, you know, specifically in the Twin Cities area, it's like we've just had here for so long. And, you know, a lot of them know how to play guitar. A lot of them have been in, you know, drum groups. A lot of them are singers, and just finding that stuff. And yeah, I've been specifically trying to find more stuff coming out of South Minneapolis in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Because I know that it exists. But just tracking it down is the hard part. Mm-hmm. But there's a group, Abuelza, who... a lot of folks remember in town too, and they played a lot of shows here. And they have a record that's called On the Avenue, and it's referring to Franklin Ave. And so they probably have, I don't know, maybe the record somewhere in this building. But so it's just cool because there is that history here too, and tracking some of it down is part of, you know, the fun in doing what I do. But yeah, specifically too, looking for Native rappers in the early 90s, late 80s coming out of the Twin Cities. So if anyone listening knows about that, please shoot me an email, because I'm very curious about things that were happening in Phillips or Northside back in the day. But yeah, mm-hmm. That's my little plug here.
I know, I should
like relative hadn't come up to me and be like, hey, like you should check this out, Justice. And so yeah, just stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know, somewhere there's a tape of that recording made in the closet, you know, like. It's wild. It's all
I know
out there.
Adrian Liberty, and I don't. I'm like, I had no idea he was a performer. So.
I'm like, I hope he's all right with me talking about this. I don't know. I used to play in punk bands and stuff, and I've worked as a language teacher now. So it was just a lot of like, I was so fascinated and pumped on that when I found it out. So Big shout out Miigwech to him if he ever hears this. Anytime. I'll sit down at the, I'll bring some tobacco and coffee, and if anyone listening wants to talk about music back in the day, I'll sit down and post up. I love that stuff.
The two medicines, big medicines. Wakalapi.
Oh.
Oh my gosh, I had a question in my mind and then it went. I think my uncle too. I'll connect you with my uncle. I remember when he's a little bit older than me, but I remember him recording stuff in the in his room. So I'll connect you with two people. I'm gonna write this down. But so anyone out there listening who knows of any Native folks, any Native artists or rappers or anything, even from 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and even 2000s, please connect with Justice Broken Rope on social media so that we can build the archival collection together and he can synthesize it and kind of present it to our community in a meaningful way and capture these stories and around our history as Native people. So how long have you been doing this project, and how did it kind of come about?
Yeah, the project is called Wetecha Records, and it kind of just came from, I was, like I said, I toured a lot back in the day. I got to go around the world and play with these bands, but I was always shopping for records. I was always going to record stores, and, I'd get up early while everyone was kind of sleeping, I'd go walk to a record store and start digging, and every now and then I would just, flip through these records and see like a Native guy on it. And I go, oh, that's interesting. And, I'd just grab it. And back in the day, they were often dollar records because mm-hmm. they weren't famous records, or they were rare, but they weren't sought after necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I'd be like, oh, who's this uncle on here? And I'd pick it up. And after a while, I realized I had like a stack of them. And it just kind of kept growing. And there were Native records that I knew about, like that Hopi garage rock record I was talking about earlier, like a Pueblo record, some of these ones that were really expensive, and there was just no way I could hear them. And that really frustrated me that there were non-Native collectors out there that were gatekeeping mm-hmm. our music from us in those communities. And so then I realized, like, well, I have all these records, and a lot of them aren't digitized, or there's no way to hear them, so how am I any better then? And so I think, like, towards the end of the, 2020, maybe 2021, started just, digitizing them. And vinyl and 8-tracks and cassette tapes specifically, digitizing them. And I just started putting them up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then I started to see that, folks from those communities were finding them or searching for them and commenting and being like, oh, thank you for putting this up. Or, this is my uncle's band. Thank you for doing this. Or, I haven't heard this in 30, 40 years. My mom used to cook while playing this record in the background. So just really cool stories like that. And that's where I was like, oh, this is exactly what I'd hoped for. Like, people finding this again, Native folks finding it. And yeah, I started to add more volume to that. And I've been working in education for, I think, the last 4 or 5 years. So it was more of a weekend thing. Saturdays I would post up and try and get a couple records done. Made a social media account to go along with it. And then it kind of just took off. Different people heard about it. But I think specifically, yeah, I would say 5 years now I've been going at it. Maybe 4, hitting it pretty hard, though. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just grateful that people are enthusiastic about it and the music's reaching the people that need to hear it,
Yeah, and I feel like, so on this show, I've noticed, when people actually kind of follow their path and, listen to their intuition and things like that, it's like you never really know who you're healing yourself, but you're also healing other people. So mm-hmm. I feel like that those stories that you hear from families or family members who recall, or if they had passed on, but mm-hmm. this is their what they remember, and I think that's super powerful. And you never really know unless you kind of take that first step or have faith that you're doing the right thing and kind of move forward and digitizing that. Like you said, you kind of just went this path, and then all of a sudden all these things are happening. And so I think that's powerful too, because it's it's like your spirit helpers are kind of guiding you, nudging you, let's go to the record store or let's do this, and you're listening. So I feel like that's powerful.
Yeah, I think I don't know, just that aspect. You know, I was thinking about driving into the studio, and I was like, yeah, what is healing? You know, the focus of this show, or kind of the theme around it, and the way that music has been so healing for me and carried me through so much in my life and continues to. And I think as Native people, we have all these struggles and we have all these beautiful things in our lives. And just knowing that that's something we still connect with, and we always have. We've always had music. We've always had a drum. We've always been singing songs, whatever it might be, and that we still honor that and do that today. And it's so much a part of who we are as people. And just being grateful that I get to experience it in this way, and I get to share it with other people, and often through my tribe's language too. And just, I don't know, I'm just very grateful that I have this opportunity and that folks get to hear it and we all get to share it as a community.
Yeah, I love that. I get all emotional with everybody's gifts that they bring. I just get very emotional, but a lot of the times, every week.
Oh, well, you're doing a good thing here. Yeah, you're bringing folks in, and it's about healing and about community. And I think that's the best thing we can do as people sometimes, is just get together and talk.
So. Yeah, for sure. I feel like, you know, I did a whole presentation one time on visiting, like, storytelling through sovereignty, and like, and I don't even visit with anybody. I think this show has like forced me to like sit down and actually like visit with people, and I realize how much I miss doing that, because I remember, you know, like back in the day, people would come over and you'd sit for a long time with coffee and, you know, laughing at, you know, I remember putting friggin' Vaseline on my legs, and my aunties are like, she put Vaseline on her legs, and they're like, what? And they're laughing.
Everything. Yeah.
I know, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. But they just be laughing and teasing you and cooking and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Yeah, just chopping it up.
Yeah,
that's
just chopping
the way to
it
do
up.
It.
Yeah, so this has been really awesome. What is your process like? So when you say you digitize, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's funny because I've been invited to and presented at Sound Archivist Conference, and I think that the like DIY approach and me kind of like teaching myself a lot of this stuff is those guys who are like audio engineers, and like we were talking a little bit about this before we were recording, but I think they cringe a little bit when they find out how I do stuff, because I don't work through an institution. I don't have like funding to do this, really. Like it's all on my own, and primarily all like self-funded and just kind of doing it as I can. And so I use Audacity, because I've been using Audacity since like 2002 or something, and I have a turntable that I run, you know, a cable from to the computer laptop. I digitize it. I figured out kind of the best speed and like the best way to do it. I don't clean up the records, so because there's a part of me that's like, if I have a really beat up vinyl record, like listeners who know what a vinyl record sounds like, they're really fragile. So sometimes they can be really clean, and it's the best sounding way to hear music. Sometimes they're really beat up, they're scratched. But I think that that's part of those histories too, because I like to think like, well, that record is beat up because it was getting played. It was maybe at a res radio station, or folks were partying with it, whatever it might be. So that history, you know, you treat those objects, you know, because they have their own story. And I think for me, I'm like a 50-year-old object still found its way to me, and it has this Native music on it. So whatever life it lived, I want to hear that as well. And so I don't clean up the records. I wipe off like dust and debris. I make them as like loud and I guess clean as they can be, but I don't edit it in any software or anything. So it is just kind of straightforward, like turntable into Audacity, trim it, and then I keep WAV files of everything on my computer, and then I upload it to YouTube. And then that's just on Wateca Records. If you look that up, Wateca Records on YouTube, you'll see all those. But then I have an Instagram account too, where I post like 1-minute clips of it and a little bio of the artist if I can find research on it. And so that's kind of the process. I'm working on building a website that'll have a database where you can search by tribe, and then if like bands had shared members and things like that, because I'd love for someone to be like, hey, I'm looking for, you know, a country singer who's from like Lac du Flambeau or something like that, and you can just click on a link and see if I have any artists from that res or that community. And That's something I always wanted. And so I'm like, well, if you want something and you have the ability to do it yourself, then do it. And that's kind of been the whole way that this project has worked, is I just wanted to see it happen. And I was able to start doing it on my own. And so I did, you know, and it's just been really good. Mm-hmm. That I can do it, you know, from my house.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Have you had any interest in like investors at all?
I was able to finally get a grant for the first time this year. And then, I have some other projects going. There's some stuff I can't announce yet because mm-hmm. it's through, like, it's collaboration with other people. But and they haven't formally announced it. But, yeah, I've had help and interest in terms of, like, how I can platform this more, like, build it better. And then I do have a lot of people, native and non-native, who are like, I really think what you're doing is special and cool, and if there's any way I can help, like, those are like the folks I need to reach out to for like building a website or mm-hmm. some things I don't know how to do on my own and that someone else could show me how to do. There's people have been very generous with their time and like offering assistance, and other archivist people, and but I know that I'm also, yeah, this is like part-time side gig, like, yeah. Very much, you know, we were talking about, yeah, when you can find time to do things. And I just do what I can with what I got, and that's kind of always been my methodology. But
so do you have a favorite song that you have captured or come across?
Oh man, I always get asked this, and I mean, yeah, the answer is yes, but it's hard to pick. And I think it's the thing, is it's ongoing, like I'm still finding stuff constantly. And there's a band, I do say though, like there's an Inuit band from way up north called Sugluk, and they have two like 45s that the CBC, Canadian Broadcast Company, put out in the early 70s, and half of it is in their language and half of it is in English, but they just sound like they're like reserves, like CCR, like they're just... They're like these, and they dress the part too, you know, they got like flared blue jeans, denim jackets, and, you know, headbands. And when I heard them for the first time on this like compilation called Native North America a few years back, that was the band where I was like, oh my God, I wonder if this exists elsewhere too. And I was like, it has to. And I've been able to find more stuff like that, obviously, but Sugluk is the Inuit band that, it just hits that like kind of, yeah, Creedence, late 60s country rock kind of vibe. Yeah, you're just picturing like uncles wearing like nice sunglasses, smoking cigarettes, and just looking real cool. So that's the one band, Sugluk. But then finding stuff from around here, specifically Ojibwe and Dakota, Lakota, Buddy Redbow. I mean, that one is just one of those ones where he put out a couple, I think like three like formal albums, and you know, there are Lakota songs in there about either spirituality or love songs. I say Lakota is in there in the language. And for me, as like a language teacher and like someone who has a lot of passion around that, just hearing like, oh, there's a guy from Pine Ridge, you know, who put these songs out and made a big impact and toured a lot on a lot of different Native people. And so he is by default one too, where I'm just like, well, he's Lakota, and like he has songs in Lakota, and he's just a great country singer and did a lot for Native people back in the day. So Buddy Redbow is the other one too, where it's like, you want me to pick a favorite, I'll just keep rambling.
Not this question.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so tell me, so you are, you have a book release event coming up. So tell me about the book and kind of the event too.
Yeah. There's another artist in town, Ryan Nelson, and he reached out to me when he heard about what I was doing. And he's Dakota descent, and he's just like, I like what you're doing. Like, would you want to work together on this book? And I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know how to do a book myself or anything. And it was more of a visual book rather than like a research thing. And so he, you know, he spent like probably 13 hours in my apartment, and he photographed so many of these record covers and like ephemera, like flyers or different things. And then he did all the work of, I gave him the content and I was like, these are the things I want in here. And then he did like the layout, and he got the funding and is publishing the book through his publishing company. And so he kind of put it all together. And you saw a copy of it, I think, at the mm-hmm. Mounds View event. And I don't have one with me right now. But, yeah, we'll have a release on January 17th here. I think in Northeast Minneapolis is where we're going to do it. But I'll be DJing for – I don't have the exact time yet. You can follow me on Instagram at wotecha.records to see me post about it. But, yeah, I'll DJ for about an hour, and then I'll have my friend Kaylin Fay, who's a Cherokee Muskogee folk singer-songwriter from Tulsa. She's going to come up and perform as well. And so, yeah, that's January 17th, and you'll be able to buy a copy of the book there. And it's called Wotecha Records Sourcebook, but not in time for Christmas, unfortunately. It's a little stocking stuffer. But, yeah, any Native rockers in your life, musicians, or just aunties and uncles who like that sort of thing, I think will be kind of interested or excited about it. So, yeah, show up if you can, free. And be snacks and stuff. So.
Heck yeah. Well, I mean, there's birthdays and there's Valentine's.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
So many reasons to get somebody a gift.
Exactly.
There's always something.
Always.
So we're going to actually play a song from your collection. What is the song called? And tell me how you came across it.
Yeah. I think I want to do, yeah, Buddy Redbow Indian Love Song. That's one where, like, I've had people who, you know, start singing it to me at events and stuff. I'll be DJing it and they'll come on and be like, yeah, you know, like, and I was singing it when I was like getting into my car this morning on the way to work. And I was just like, what song would I want to put on the show? And that one, you know, would have played on the radio, you know, like probably McGizzy or here mm-hmm. back in the day. And then also on a lot of reservations, people know that song, but, yeah, it was one of those ones where, again, when I found out about Buddy Redbow, and I was just like, oh, this guy from Pine Ridge, and he's just such a good singer, and it's just old school country and really straightforward, but he sings in one or two of the verses in Lakota, and so there's that part, too, where he's going back and forth between English and Lakota, and when you can help learn your language through music, too, that's just really special, and so, yeah, that's the song that we'll be playing. Indian Love Song by Buddy Redbow, Ogallala Lakota.
By Buddy Redbow, BRB. That's what I was introduced to to Buddy Redbow by my mentor and elder Ida Downwind, because I didn't, you know, being from Minneapolis, I wasn't exposed to a lot of folk. So, but when I heard his name, I'm like BRB.
That's the record cover too. It's just a big red with a black backdrop. BRB.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the event. I'm looking forward to, so check out the YouTube channel, Wotecha Records. And just quickly for my own curiosity, how did you come up with the name for the project?
It's my favorite Lakota word. You know what it means? I feel like.
Well, it makes me hungry.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Pow MC for sure would probably know. But yeah, a lot of. Mostly non-native folks or folks who aren't from kind of our area are like, what does that mean? Or, you know, and I'm like, do I say on air? Or do I just let people ask someone in your community? Yeah. If you don't know, or ask another Lakota or Schnob or someone who spends a lot of time around here up north. But yeah, it's my favorite Lakota word. And I think when I started doing this, I wanted, you know, I was like, what should I use? And that was the name of my puppy too. So my dog. No. It's another joke, inside joke, if you know. But my dog's name was Wotecha, and so I was like, I want to name the project. Like, it's my favorite word, and so I just kept it, and people get excited about it too. And I like the idea. It's like, you know, the music is something that I don't want to give it away too much, but it's music that sometimes gets like. Shelved or put away or like it's forgotten about, and it's like, no, we're bringing it back, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it just fit, and
bring
I like
it home.
Yeah, and I've made t-shirts, and I like wearing a shirt that says Wotecha on it. So
that's hilarious. So I always tease, I don't have a dog named this, but I always say Naboob as a name for a dog. Do you know what that means?
I don't, but I'll ask. Oh, okay.
You will?
I'll ask someone. Yeah. I hang out with another language teacher.
Naboob,
today,
so. I'll text it to you. Yeah. And then tell me when you discover what it means. Put you on a little treasure hunt. Or yeah. What is it called? Hunt. I don't know. What is it called? Scavenger hunt.
Oh, yeah, scavenger hunt.
Or like geocaching.
It's like
or
a
something.
Quest.
Quest. Well, thank you, Justice. This has been, I always say that I never have enough time because we just start getting into it and then the hour's over. But I hope to have you back maybe after your book launches and as this project progresses. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be here. And I hope just everything grows from here. I feel like this is just the beginning of a huge legacy that you'll be building and sharing with the community.
Yeah, anytime. It's just fun to be here and sit with you. And miigwech, wopila, for the opportunity.
Ho wa, miigwech.
Yeah, doksha.
Shame.